This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. My guest Greg Kinnear didn't get into acting until he was 31, after he'd hosted a late-night TV talk show and an E-Channel program called Talk Soup. But he soon delivered an Oscar-nominated performance as Jack Nicholson's gay neighbor in the film As Good As It Gets, and found there was plenty of work for him in Hollywood. A review from the Times of London said that while he often played the straight man in films, Kinnear, through his unconventional depiction of the ordinary, was matching his flashier co-stars shot for shot, line for line. Kinnear's films include Autofocus, Nurse Betty, Stuck on You, and the hit Little Miss Sunshine. Kinnear shared a Critics' Choice Award for Best Acting Ensemble for his performance in the film, which is now out on DVD. Kinnear also starred in Fast Food Nation, a dramatization of Eric Schlosser's book about the fast food and meatpacking industries. In the film, he plays a new marketing executive for a fast food franchise called Mickey's. In this clip, he's at the company's lab smelling renderings of some new artificial flavors.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, you like that? That's the barbecue big one.
Wow. Tastes like it's right off the grill.
You don't think it needs like liquid smoke or any other kind of flavorings?
No. I think it's perfect. Let's test that.
Okay. Try this one.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, these Caribbean seasonings are kind of tricky.
Well, we're calling them Calypso chicken tenders. I think people are going to have an expectation for maybe a touch of lime.
Oh, well, lime. Lime's easy. I just held back on the terpenoline on this to keep the flavoring subtle. But I can always go back and add more.
Yeah. Why don't you try that?
We'll keep working on it.
Greg Kinnear and many in the cast of Fast Food Nation visited meatpacking plants and shot some scenes there. I asked him what he saw that surprised him.
Well, the first thing I was surprised at was the sort of covert nature that the production was being operated under. We had gone under a fictitious production name. Instead of going by Fast Food Nation, we went as Coyote. And that was because I believe Eric doesn't have a lot of fans in the meatpacking industry. And they control and obviously have total control over a lot of the warehouses and the meat in the slaughterhouses where we wanted to get access to. So that caused us to head south of the border, and they managed to secure a plant about 300 miles south of El Paso and an area of Chihuahua. And we went down there and used those facilities.
So you're in a Mexican meatpacking plant. Did the folks running the plant know what the movie was about or what you were up to?
Yeah, they did. And they were, they were comfortable with it, comfortable enough that once we got down there, there was no secrecy about what it was we were doing. But they were, you know, really cooperative. And the truth is there are, and it's explained neatly in the movie and it's explained in the book. You know, there's two different worlds in the meat world. I mean, there is the packing facilities where the beef is frozen in huge, huge machines that I couldn't believe the size of these things. And so quickly, I mean, it's 40 below zero. This patty starts out as a little piece of ground beef and comes out just as a brick of, like a rock. And these facilities where, you know, the meat is ground and then frozen and then prepared to be shipped off are pretty clean and pretty impressive operations. And, Chris Christopherson's character, who's an old cattle rancher in the movie, talks to Don as he's sort of naively kind of going through this whole world, and he says, "Did they show you the kill floor?"
Right.
That's my Chris, by the way. That was not dubbed in.
Not bad.
I naively say, "Well, no, they didn't." And he says, "They didn't show you anything." And the truth is, where those cattle are kept and the kill floors themselves are bloody, tough conditions, obviously.
Well, Greg Kinnear, you're also starring in Little Miss Sunshine, which is this terrific story of this crazy, dysfunctional family in a VW bus taking their daughter to a beauty pageant. We got the grandfather kicked out of the nursing home for snorting heroin, the teenage boy who's quit talking, your brother-in-law, the Proust scholar who's recovering from a suicide attempt. Let's hear a clip from the film. This is one where you're on your way to, it's Los Angeles, I guess, for the beauty pageant. You're driving.
Yes.
And your wife, Toni Collette, is there. And you're describing your hopes for becoming this very successful motivational author and speaker, and you're talking about the guy who's going to promote your stuff. And you get into a little thing with your brother-in-law, who's in the back seat. He's played by Steve Carell, who's this brooding Proust scholar. Let's listen.
So finally, I'm just sitting there, and I decide, you know, this is Stan Grossman. What the hell? And I start pitching him the nine steps, and about, I don't know, 2 minutes in, he stops me. He says, I can sell this.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and this is the guy who knows how to do it, you know? You start with a book, and then you do a media tour, corporate events, DVD, VHS series. I mean, there's a whole fascinating science into how you roll these things out.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's in Scottsdale right now, you know, building the buzz and kind of getting the whole hype thing going. He's doing what the pros call a ticking clock auction.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, and I can detect that note of sarcasm there, Frank.
What sarcasm? I didn't hear.
But I want you to know something. I feel sorry for you.
You do? Good.
Yeah, I do. Because sarcasm is the refuge of losers.
It is? Really?
Yep. Sarcasm is losers trying to bring winners down to their level, and that's step four in the program.
Wow, Richard, you've really opened my eyes to what a loser I am. How much do I owe you for those pearls of wisdom?
Oh, that one's on the house, buddy.
It is?
Yeah, it's on the house. That's on the house.
And that's my guest, Greg Kinnear, the motivational speaker there, arguing with his brother-in-law, played by Steve Carell in the film Little Miss Sunshine. You have all these wacky characters and this terrific cast with Alan Arkin and Toni Collette and Paul Dano and Steve Carell and you. And then kind of the fulcrum in the middle of it is this 10-year-old actor, Abigail Breslin, who plays the 7-year-old Olive. And I know that this was not a big-budget film, and you had a 30-day shooting schedule, I believe.
30 days with 1 day reshoot. So we really made it up all in a day.
What's it like working with a child actor who, I mean, did you have to develop a particularly close relationship with her?
I had a good relationship with Abigail immediately. I think anybody who would meet her would instantly warm to her. I mean, that comes across on the screen, just that incredible humanity of hers. She is such a sweet girl, and a girl, by the way. You know, the amazing thing is that her acting is so wonderful. She is such a presence on camera that you kind of lose sight. I mean, there were six of us. We'd be sitting around talking and every once in a while, you'd glance over and Abigail would be, you know, munching down a Twinkie and playing with a yo-yo. And you'd be like, oh, my God, that's right. She's nine. And you would have to remind yourself because she just doesn't have the presence of a child.
And the other interesting thing in a modest budget film like that is you did have some action sequences here because one of the funny gags is that the bus is semi-crippled and you kind of have to push start it every time. What was it like shooting those sequences?
Well, you know, of course, I'm driving this old rickety 1969 bus, and we're not ever pushing it because they're heavy and they're hard to push. Note to those who think you can push your VW buses, there takes more than three or four people. So I would actually have my foot on the accelerator and just try and get it up to enough speeds to sell the joke that they were pushing it and that it wasn't being run by a motor. And, of course, the great fear was that I would accelerate too fast and that the people who had to then all jump on the bus wouldn't be able to jump on the bus. We didn't have a big stunt coordinator budget on this movie, as you can imagine. So somebody came up to me and whispered shortly before the first time we tried this little trick, you know, we think Abigail can go about 3 miles an hour. So take it easy on the speed. So it was more stress in this movie came from not ever acting. I never had a moment where I was worried about that. It was all about driving because we didn't have the budget, obviously, to shut down freeways. And if you were driving around L.A. on a freeway last summer, there's a hell of a good chance you're in our movie because we were everywhere and I was always behind the wheel.
Well, I do want to talk about one of your films, which is memorable to me. That's Autofocus, directed by Paul Schrader, which is this remarkable story of Bob Crane, who starred in Hogan's Heroes in the late 60s. And his life essentially unravels with a sexual addiction and this friendship with this character, John Carpenter, no relation to the film director, but who was his partner in scoring women, and Carpenter equipped him with videotaping equipment to capture his sexual exploits. You were the lead. You played Bob Crane. Tell us what appealed to you about this role and how you got into the character.
Well, I was very intrigued with the story. I mean, Bob Crane's sexual addiction was something that I was very unfamiliar with and unaware, as I think a lot of people were. I knew him as Hogan and a kind of fun-loving presence on television, but the fact that he had that kind of sort of a dual personality, and those kind of underlying demons was obviously just interesting off the bat. And then there was a very dark, subversive side to this relationship between Bob and Carpenter that started kind of fun and playful, but like all things, started to move into the area of getting a little sordid.
One of the many interesting and weird things about the Bob Crane story is his family's kind of connection to he is now dead. He was killed in 1978, but his son, right, Bob Crane Jr., was a consultant on the film. And in fact, it has a cameo appearance, I believe, interviewing somebody.
He does. Me.
You. That's right. That would be you. I'm just curious. Did you talk? I'm sure you must have talked to him about his dad. And how did he perceive?
He became aware of it in his latter years, and certainly when he was, high school and in college, or right out of high school, he started to get a real sense of what a problem this was, and faced other kids who were aware of it. It was pretty much under wraps around Hollywood, but slowly started to come out a little bit. Robert Crane Jr., he was a real helpful guy, just in terms of giving me some sense of who exactly his dad was. He had a lot of old tapes, not porn tapes, but tapes of his father performing, and a few interviews and things that I thought were very revealing from his early radio days, by the way. He was a big disc jockey out here in Los Angeles, kind of the Rick Dees of his time at one point. And he had that, that sort of ability to keep everything snappy and happy. And the fact that these two people existed and was pretty amazing. And we needed that kind of insight along the way, and Robert helped us with that.
Well, I wanted to play a clip from the film which captures a moment in Bob Crane's life when he's really come unraveled, and his career, which was really soaring when he did Hogan's Hero, had descended to dinner theater and was now at the point where the best gig he could get was going on a show called Celebrity Cooks. And this is you as Bob Crane going on this cooking show and behaving badly. And I'll note, since it's not clear from the audio, that at some point in the scene we'll hear him notice a woman in the first row of the studio audience who has a very low-cut blouse. So let's hear this cut from Autofocus.
Welcome to Celebrity Cooks. My name is Bruno Gerussi. Today we'll be cooking with Colonel Hogan himself, Mr. Bob Crane.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful to see you. Now, what has Hogan been up to?
Pretty much the same old thing. I'm still trying to pull the wool over Clink's eyes and trying to get into Hilda's pants. Actually, I did get into her pants. I married her. But now she's divorcing me, so.
Oh.
That's not worked out. But I will be next month in Long Beach performing a show called Beginner's Luck.
Wonderful. So, Bob, what recipe have you brought us today?
It is a pasta dish with chicken.
Mm-hmm.
And Fettuccine, they tell me. That's what they told me to say anyway. I don't even
sounds delicious.
You got a balloon smuggler here in the audience today. You got a license to carry those things? Here's a little tip on how to remove the wrinkles from your face. Just take off your bra.
Calm down.
Boo. Calm down. They'll cut all this stuff out. They edit it and they take all this stuff out.
That's my guest Greg Kinnear playing Bob Crane in the film Autofocus. Do you know if that scene is based on a real incident?
It is. There was a cooking show up in Canada. It was a live broadcast, and there is, or at least Paul Schrader was not able to locate the tape of it, but it was a pretty talked about incident that people were aware of where Bob had gone on to the cooking show and just... you know, there was an indication in his presence there that he was starting to maybe lose his way a little bit, and of course that was the beginning of a lot of things in his life.
You know, one of the other films that's an interesting role for you was the Farrelly Brothers film Stuck on You, where you played conjoined twins with Matt Damon. Which is, it's really actually a sweet movie, but I wondered if you had any reservations about taking that role when it could be seen as being in such terrible taste.
Well, I thought that Peter Farrelly and Bobby Farrelly, who I know, who actually have done a lot on behalf of the, you know, handicapped people and have done a lot to try to... put characters in their movies who may have physical challenges and let them be part of the joke. In other words, not treat them with kid gloves and not say, you know, it's almost like a reverse discrimination where, okay, well, they're handicapped, so we're not allowed to have any, they're not allowed to be part of the joke. There's not allowed to be any humor when dealing with somebody like that. And I think that that is an ongoing issue that you can kind of find pieces of in all of their films. So, you know, I felt like they would treat it properly. And moreover, when I read the script, I, you know, the fact that they're, you know, that Bob and Walt are conjoined is really secondary for them. They don't see any challenges. They don't see any difficulties. And I think that that's, you know, I think that's true of a lot of you know, people who might have, you know, any kind of handicap, that the issue is in the people around them and less about them.
The other thing that's interesting about that film from the Greg Kinnear point of view is that's in this film you get to belt out a show tune with a big band at the end of the song. Summertime must
that's
have been
right.
fun. Yeah.
Ah, it was great, actually. I'd never recorded anything before, and I was half, you know, Pete sent me the Billy, who was that?
The Billy Stewart that did this.
Yeah,
the
Billy
version.
Stewart. Right. He sent me the original Billy Stewart and he said, you know, you need to start listening to this right as soon as I signed on to the movie. And I was thinking, what the hell am I listening to this for? And then he sprung it on me that I was going to go down to somebody's garage and do a recording of it. But the real highlight was, of course, Meryl Streep agreeing to come on and do the dance number with me at the end of the movie. It was a very surreal couple of days, and she was a great sport for playing along.
Well, Greg Kinnear, we're happy you were able to find some time for us. Thanks a lot.
And thank you for having me.
Greg Kinnear singing in the Farrelly Brothers film Stuck on You. He starred in the recent movie Little Miss Sunshine, which is now out on DVD. His film Fast Food Nation will be out on DVD in March. I spoke with him last year.